Hampton Left Lion Live podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. My name is Sophie and I'm editor at Left Lion magazine. In this episode, we have a very special guest, Emily Catherine. She's a well-known artist in Nottingham. You may have seen her work adorning walls and buildings around the city. She's designed album covers. She's part of the popular Beer Mat Doodles project. She creates our editorial contributor illustrations in Left Lion magazine and has a plethora of her own projects and paintings, some of which you can catch at her upcoming exhibition.
We know it's hard having to wait a whole month in between Left Lion magazines. Heck, it's difficult enough getting through the week. Worry not, listener, we've answered the call. You can get a pithy, up-to-date digest of the best stuff going on in Nottingham each week direct to your inbox every Wednesday by signing up to the Left Lion Weekly newsletter. Left Lion Weekly contains our top recommendations of events, new content, exclusive competitions and more besides. So what are you waiting for? Visit leftline.co.uk/newsletter to sign up now.
We've spoken a little previously and you have mentioned you've been an artist for 10 years, but you've kind of come into it slightly later in life when you were about 30.
Yeah.
So can you just talk a little bit about what you were doing previous to that and how that sort of led into what you're doing now?
Yes. So I was a cleaner, a carer. I did a little bit of mentoring, worked in pubs. I did a little bit of everything, but always drew. My old primary school teacher is here, and he can attest that I always drew. Sometimes I drew when I shouldn't have been drawing, but I didn't think that I could do it as a job. So I had a big life change and thought, ooh, I might try and do it as a job. And at the time, we had European Regional Development Fund, and that money was used for something called Real Creative Futures. And it helped creatives turn whatever creative practice they had into a business. And I went along and had a bit of an ego battle, like, I can't do this, I'm not talented. But then just got over myself and like had a Haribo and decided to start a business. So in short, that's how it started. But I didn't at any point think that I could actually do it. Like I went to study fine art and they didn't think I fitted in. And then they said, oh, you're an illustrator. So then I went and had an interview for an illustration course. And they were like, we think you're a fine artist. So I was like, oh, that just doesn't sound like I'm going to fit anywhere. So I did a totally different degree and just sort of forgot about it. So had I not have got to 30 and gone, oh, how to turn whatever you can do into a creative business, then I would never have tried it.
Do you think that like having all of that life experience beforehand has benefited you as an artist?
Yeah. Yeah, because, so I had like a really, quite an unusual education and upbringing. So I was like born in Mid Wales, brought up in a caravan, moved to Nottingham in disaster, was feral essentially. Didn't know to use an inside toilet when I first got to Nottingham. And everyone was saying bath and grass and I was Welsh. And then, you know, loved Nottingham. It was like local and sweet and irreverent, which I love. So I think, had I have not then had that journey of life experience and trying out different jobs, I don't think now I would appreciate it as much. I think it's about appreciating it, isn't it? Like I went to uni as a mature student, and I loved learning rather than the experience of uni, so.
Absolutely, and like being categorized by a teacher when you're quite young, I think can often have quite a big effect on how you see your future. So like, in terms of how you've recategorized yourself or built that confidence to, you know, maybe call yourself an artist now, would you call yourself an artist, and how have you sort of fought that to feel more comfortable?
That's a really interesting question, because I only, as of about 2 months ago, got comfortable with calling myself an artist, and I've been doing it for 10 years. Because, like, there's a big sort of misnomer about high and low art. So in the high art world, if you do portraiture or things that look quite a lot like the thing that you're trying to draw or paint, unless you have a you know, fairly good cerebral backstory for it, it's not really considered high art in the current economic art value system. So I was really conscious that I didn't want to say that that's what I was, because then I'd have to then specify I'm a contemporary artist or I'm a whatever artist. And that didn't interest me. I wanted to do loads of different things. And I really pride myself on doing loads of different styles for loads of different people. And I didn't want it to ever appear snobby. So in my world, I was like, well, I'll just call myself an illustrator. So now I've met a curator who's curating the exhibition. She was like, I deal in high artists all the time. Like, you're definitely an artist. So it's only when a curator who deals with all spectrums of art and illustration and creative practices have I finally gone, yeah, I probably am an artist, aren't I?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a shame for anyone creative, because you have to kind of, you know, if you work in marketing and you get a job in marketing, you are a marketer.
Yeah.
For example, but an artist, it's such a murky place, and it's sort of tied. It's often really tied into the sort of ego and personality and self-esteem of the person creating something.
Hugely, yeah. And I think with visual art as well, it's so much more about the viewer than it is the sort of auteur. In films, you have the auteur, don't you? And in music, you have the artist, and they have. You speak to musical artists and they'll say all the time, well, I'm, you know, not genre specific. And it's much easier to carve that out in the art world, because you have an economy attached to it. You know, you're either an emerging or a fringe, or you're a fine artist, and it doesn't seem to be a lot of wiggle room. You know, it's quite a difficult thing, especially if you want to do, you know, murals, street art, graffiti, illustration, portraiture. It's, you know, it's big scope.
Yeah. And I think, so your work is, we were just saying, it's so varied. You've done like really fun graphic pieces. You've done really intimate portraits. You've painted on buildings, and then you've done things like the beer mat doodles, which are, you know, much more in the moment. Have you got like a favorite that you choose, or do you just really like exploring every different like variety that you can have a go at?
Yeah, I think like, my commercial work, so stuff that I do for commission, I really enjoy the variety of that. Even if it doesn't feed my soul, I still really enjoy the challenge of it. But that has meant that I've ended up in the past being a bit of a busy fool. So I've taken loads of commission work to eat and then gone, but my soul. And then it's bursted out of me, or, you know, ended up in a series that I've been working on for 8 years, which is the recent series that I've done. Because you need to itch that scratch, but you also need to get the balance of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think your, from what I can see anyway, your work sort of, like you were just saying, it really reflects the subject.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you really get into who you're working with.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so do you have a favourite project that you've worked on, or a favourite person that you've worked with in the past?
Ooh, that's difficult. Because it's all for different reasons. Like, I remember one of my first commissions was this woman who was commissioning me to draw a picture of her husband's dog that had died. And it was just a pencil drawing of a dog. But the interaction with the woman about the husband and the story of the dog, you know, like, you understood the entire story. So I spent, like, I think the entire commission just sobbing over a dog. You know what I mean? Like, it's stuff like that you can't really predict how people's stories are going to affect you in that way. But then the exciting stuff, like Paul Smith mural, amazing. Get to get trained on a scissor lift and like pootle around at 5 a.m. on Bridlesmith Gate. It's brilliant. Then meet Paul Smith. Do you know, like, so things are really exciting for different reasons, you know.
Yeah, I guess you've got some, yeah, very much like personal projects. And then I want to talk a bit about the Bridlesmith mural. Like, how did you get into that? And what was it like painting what was it, like 20-foot space?
It was great. I loved it. I want to do loads more of that. So that was a project that was a kind of private, ALB Group owned pretty much all the buildings on Bridlesmith. And they hired a kind of intermediary company called The Carousel, who were mediating between all the artists, and then they handpicked all the artists. But we had, they were basically saying, like, we want you to do the historical one on this, we want you to do this one, we want you to do that one. So we all had to come up with a brief, which is great, isn't it? Because then if it plays to your strength, so mine was, I'm going to design Paul Smith, but with his favourite album cover that also has a story of Nottingham in it. You know,
which one was that?
So it's Cream is his favourite. The very famous pink and purple one, but I put like the Nottingham Catchfly flower in there and the horseshoe for Bridal Smith Gate and his journey of, you know, which tailors and like little measuring tapes and tiny little bits where I swapped out what that collage was and put stuff that meant stuff to him in there. And then the actual physical act of it was just, so much fun. It's great.
So you were up sort of what, 20 feet up a building on a
yeah.
lift?
Yeah, on a
at 5 a.m.
At 5 a.m. all the way through to like maybe 8. And it rained and it was in October and it was freezing. And my security guy got mistaken for a homeless man and was offered free food and coffee in the morning because we were, by the end of the 2 weeks, we were so tired and broken that they were like, are you guys okay? I was having to do like 4-point turns in the middle of like, you know, ancient cobbled streets on a scissor lift.
Did you get to speak to Paul Smith before that and find out his, like, do a little interview with him and find out his favourite influences? Or
no. So they had to okay it with his team, but his team, I don't think, told him anything about it, because when he came to meet us afterwards, he was like, what's this mean? What does that mean? Oh, that's really clever. And then he took us through the entire story of, like, where he started. He booted... There's two doors when you go into Bridal Smith Gate. There's like the little tailors. He was in the middle of the little tailors in a kind of like in a corridor. And then there's two doors. One has got the plaque on it that says what we've done. And then there's one that's like boarded up next to it. And he and his dad booted the glass out and created a separate front door, totally illegally, to get into his little corridor in the tailors.
Brilliant. For anyone who is here, you may be able to see it on a screen at some point of Emily painting the building in Bridal Smith Gate. But for anyone listening, you can probably find it on Emily's Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be pictures. Or go down to Bridal Smith Gate and have a look yourself, because there's Emily's work and then a few other pieces down there. And it's really like, it's a quite an empty area of town, but it's really brought a lot of like... personality and love to that area, which is such a old part of the city, so it's lovely to have that.
That's good. I'm glad you think so, because that's what, that was the point of it. That's good.
So you've worked on really big scale like that, and you've done a lot of street art as well in the past. But then you've also done the Beer Mat Doodles, which is a project that's quite sort of event-based and very like face-to-face with people. So I don't know if you've got a preference for working huge and working small, and can you talk a little bit about Beer Mat Doodles and how that came about?
Yeah, Jared and I started Beer Mat Doodles. Basically, we were having a chat over my kitchen table about how Jared could make Nottingham Craft Beer Week more creative. And I said, why don't we draw on blank beer mats? Portraits of people, and he went, Emily, that's an amazing idea. If you don't make that into a business, I will. And I was like, oh, I don't want another business. And he was like, gotta do it. So we went into business together. And Beer Mat Doodles is amazing because it's like speed dating, but with portraiture. Like you have to meet someone, look at someone, draw the essence of them, not what they look like. You've got to do it kindly, and you've got to ask them questions. So it's a real challenge, and you've got to try and do that in 5 to 10 minutes maximum. And if you don't do it in 5 to 10 minutes maximum, you're going to have a huge queue of really disappointed people. So you get to go all over the country and go and do events in crazy places, and you also get to witness beautiful things like weddings, birthdays, you know, things that are quite sweet. But when it comes to like physically, I would always prefer to stand up at an easel or a wall and go big, I think it was one of the first times that I messed up my shoulder by doing beer mat doodles like this for about 4.5 hours and just got a frozen shoulder. And the physiotherapist was like, what have you been doing? And I was like, I just draw loads of people in about 5 seconds, do it for 4 hours. She was like, I can't even get the knots out of this. This is you for life, you know? So I quite like doing walls now because I'm old.
Yeah, I mean, the injuries that come with making art. But, I mean, I would expect that, like, a huge thing would cause more... I mean, you have to do stretches before you...
Well, that's what's so
you
great.
Start reaching, but.
Like, graffiti artists will tell you particularly, because with graph artists, they're doing really, really quick, for obvious reasons, letters, and they've got to be quick about it, and it's all fluid. So if you want a proper line, you've got to dance your whole body through that line. So actually, as it goes, like you're exhausted and you'll be cold and tired and covered in paint and your lungs won't work anymore. But from a body point of view, your muscles are really warm. You're standing up. You're not sitting down. It's great for your spine. You're out in the fresh air. You know, there's so many elements of it that are much better. Like if I had it my way, I would just wear stilts for doing 20 foot, you know, because I could move around. Like the scissor lift for me was actually like quite constricting because I had to go, oh, now I've got to lower the lift and then I've got to drive down the, you know what I mean? I did like a 60 foot back of a gable end school in Beeston and we had a scaffold. It was a nightmare because my scaffold was tiny. So I was only able to do that like a printer, you know, and all the way down.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we spend so much time creating and just using computers these days that we are becoming these weird, like folded over beings, and putting, you know, something on a huge wall, you are actually using your physical self, which is quite nice. It's almost like akin to like dance or something.
It's
like
totally
really,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. Really expressive as well because you have to use your body. So you often find that you do things different.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I've seen on your like on your socials, you often like film yourself doing your art, and quite often you're doing these really big portraits, and it's quite like open. And I feel like a lot of art years and years ago would have been quite a private process, and we would have been in the studio like creating something, no cameras, no. Conversations, no social media, and then they just present it to the world once it's perfected and done.
Yeah.
And you seem very open with that. So like, have you always been that way? Or did you have to, train yourself to be confident to show people your work? Because I think with beer mat doodles and doing things in the street, you know, you are creating something that people can see the process of.
I've really had to learn that. Like, I remember when I started my business, it just so happened that I discovered that I needed glasses. And putting a pair of glasses on and starting my business and calling myself Emily Catherine, I suddenly was just a different version of me. And I really needed that because it was one step of separation between the real Emily. And as things have got more reels-based, video-based, interactive, people want to see live art, people encourage live art, people want to take part in live art, I've had to just completely break down all of those barriers. And those time lapses, I mean, some of them, I've got food on my trousers and I had, you know, like it's quite obvious that I've literally rolled out of bed and I just turned my back and, you know, I don't really want to see me looking, you know, dressed in 5 fleeces, looking uncomfortable, being able to see my breath in the air. It's not really what I want to show people, but I think you have to because people don't actually care about you. They just care about what you're, you know, so it's like low self-esteem but big ego, isn't it? You have to battle down the ego if you need your self-esteem to go up. It's that classic oxymoron of the, you know, we are all massive egotistical, quite vain people. So it's been quite a nice challenge, really, forcing myself to do that in public.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, yeah, it's quite a scary thing. Do you feel like you do have, like, an alter ego as an artist then a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's only recently that I'm much more comfortable with talking about me, like my old life, or like the people that I love or hold dear. It's been very, very recent. And I think it's literally just because I've done this for 10 years and I'm sort of like, I've got nothing to prove anymore. Whereas before I used to keep my sort of professional life and my personal life so separate that it was actually a bit obstructive, you know.
Mm. And you can get quite, I mean, maybe in years to come, you can get more playful with it if you wanted
exactly.
to. 'Cause some people do literally have, you know, a pseudonym, like a costume almost, as their, you know, and we're really used to that as musicians and maybe actors acting like that. But I feel like for artists, it's like we've always been like, you must be your most authentic self, and and it's quite, you know, it's quite sort of claustrophobic to be that and not.
Yeah, it's play. It's too much to ask of someone to give, you know, put their soul on a canvas as well as, and also just tell us everything personally about, you know. So there's got to be some level of separation. But I think the more comfortable that you get with yourself, the easier it is for just to not sweat the small stuff, you know.
And do you think, like, you know, obviously coming into art as a little bit older, do you think that that's helped as well? Because I feel like it's a, you know, when you're just learning about yourself as, like, you know, a teenager maybe studying, these are the rules of art. You know, if you're more comfortable in yourself and you know a bit more about the world, you can go outside the lines a little bit more, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's taken me a long time. I mean, I think it's an individual personal journey for everybody. I think I'm quite, like, backward with my own acceptance of myself and my openness about myself. So if I was younger and learning those rules and regs, I still would have been really self-conscious and insecure, I think. I think it's more about the individual than it is on the whole. But I would agree with you about kind of the era of how we teach creativity. I think back in the day that I would have got taught it traditionally, I think it would have done more damage than good, because I know a lot of people my age who came away with the idea that they couldn't be artists, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of people think that to be an artist, you have to have formal training, you have to have a studio, you have to have lots of fancy equipment and tools. And I think from what I know, you work with, you know, you work in your kitchen.
Yeah.
And you use a lot of different supplies.
Like, I do.
What's your process like? And what do you, like, is it messy? Is it spontaneous? Are you quite, like, planning things out?
I'm a meticulous planner, and I am very neat because I work at home. I don't want to eat all the charcoal or the paint. I have drunk paint water more times than I can count, but so has everyone. But when it comes to feeling free in that space, I'm not backwards and coming forwards. Like, I wouldn't not do a piece, even if I thought that I might get spray paint all over a windowsill. In my mind, I was like, I've got to do it. And so I will repaint that window. You know, I'm quite determined. But yeah, I do like mixing it up a little bit.
So do you have is there anything that you do to, like, set your creativity up? You know, if you were sat there, right, it's Friday, Thursday night, I'm going to sit and paint tonight. Do you have, like, specific music? Is there anything you do, like little rituals to get yourself going?
Yeah, I make a playlist. The playlist has to be a mix, slow and fast, and, like, bowdy and gentle, depending on, like, what project I need. And then it's tea, and it has to be close to a door so I can go and have a fag. And I will have a headset with a microphone so that I can take calls throughout and leave podcast-length voice notes just in case. And, that's my comfort zone.
Nice.
But tea is key.
Tea is key.
Yeah.
Nice. And do you work on stuff, like, quite quickly? Do you finish it in one go? Because I know a lot of artists have a dozen things left behind, like, watching them, like, why haven't you finished me? Or do you, you know, are you quite quick in finishing things? How do you work in that way?
I'd say I'm an incredibly slow worker, but I am all commission-based. So if I've got a deadline, I've never not hit a deadline, do you know what I mean? But I'm not one of those people that tries to do it in one go. I did that once, and the commissioner told me to burn it.
Blimey.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't my best work, but still, thought it was a bit harsh. So I'm an early riser and early to bed, so I will down tools and make myself go to bed, even if I know that I want to carry on.
Hello, this is Jared from Left Lion, Nottingham's events and culture publication. Each month we publish a beautiful free magazine that shines a light on the art, music, food, literature and more that makes Nottingham such a vibrant and creative city to live in. It's a bit unusual for a local print magazine to survive in the digital age, but we've managed to keep it going for over 20 years, giving the city's artists, photographers and writers a platform to publish their work. Every month we distribute 15,000 copies in over 300 venues across the county. You can find it in every local library, every Castle Rock pub, in all active Nottingham leisure centres and all the best cafes, bars and hangouts in the city. If you're ever in town at the start of the month, you might have seen our Left Lion bike rolling around the streets delivering our magazines. In line with our pledge to become a carbon neutral company, we deliver on foot by electric bicycle or, where strictly necessary, by van. You can also read the full magazine and lots more online for free at leftlion.co.uk. Check out the event listings on our website to find out what's going on in Notts, and if you'd like to promote your business or organisation with us, please visit leftlion.co.uk/advertise.
What would you say to someone who, like someone who's quite young and maybe starting out and who believes that they need, you know, approval or professional tools or to be told you are an artist? Like, what would you, what advice would you give to someone who's, you know, from what you've learned?
It's absolute complete bullshit, and it's set against you to convince you to not do it, when actually you should at least have a go. Because if you love something, if you really want to do something, the drive for you to carry on doing it will make you better at it. Even if you start and you are not good, you will be good within 3-4 years or whatever. The only thing that you need is guidance. You need good quality free information. You need good quality support. And you also need a bit of expectation management. Like, you are not going to be able to make enough money straight out the bat. So you're going to have to spin 5 plates of jobs. You know, it's really hard work. But if you love doing it, then you'll do the hard work and it won't feel like work. It's that. It's that reality check.
Yeah, I think one thing that we often forget is that, like, anyone starting out at something is going to be a little bit clunky.
Definitely.
Like, I always think about, like, Jimi Hendrix when he first picked up a guitar and his neighbours were probably like, oh my God, why is that kid learning guitar? And, like, of course it's amazing that someone carries on and, like, perseveres. So, but yeah, I think, like, having that guidance around you and just the perseverance, seeing the long game.
Seeing the long game, yeah. Because, like, I can't remember exactly what the statistics are, but I think the first... So I think it's something ridiculous, like 98% of new businesses fold within the first 5 years. Then that drops to something like 72% in 10. And then once you've got past 10 years, you should be golden. That's incredible. It's like 10 years of your life. So if you see it like that, you don't have to have an excuse or permission, you know. Mm-hmm.
And, like, being an artist, I feel like it's often, like, we really try and separate that from commerce or else it's not, you know, as valuable. But obviously any artist, like you say, they need to eat. You need to make money or else it's sort of something that you have to shove away to an evening activity and that kind of thing. So, like, how do you balance that as a creative person to, like, get stuck into, no, I need to actually do my tax return and, you know, develop a website and, like, does that come easy to you or?
No, I can't actually do maths. Like, I've got dyscalculia or whatever it's called. I'm terrible. I can't even read numbers. I'm a pretty organised person, but only because I kind of know have to be. I know that I have to be. But I think that's the thing, isn't it, is going... In order to be a legitimate business, you have to do these 5 things, let's say. As soon as you know that you have to do that, and that's just part of your business, because obviously the end goal is for you to make all of your money with that one job that you love, that becomes part of your incentive. And there are certain things that artists feel really uncomfortable with doing. I hate teaching. I hate it. Every time someone asks me to teach, I really resent them for it, but I do it because I know that I'm going to get some money for it. But I try and limit that so that I try and get jobs that are, can you paint a mural for us? I'm like, yes, I want to get those jobs. Or do you want to come and do a talk? Yes, I do. Or a workshop for adults? Yeah, all right then. But, you know, when it comes to, will you teach loads of kids spray painting? No. I'd actually rather go and do a shift in a bar. For other artists, that might be amazing for them. That might be a wicked opportunity. So it is also about, like, knowing where your pockets of money are. Where are you going to get the work that you want to do? And what are you really good at? Because the truth is, I don't like teaching because I'm not very good at it. You know?
Yeah, it's really good to know your strengths. And I think the thing is with anyone creative that's turning into a business, so you have to kind of do everything. You know, these days you have to be your own marketer, web developer, accountant, and it's just not in everyone's skill set. It would be really weird for it to be.
Yeah, so whatever you can delegate and whatever you can sort of cheat at and say no to and say yes to, you've got to play to your strengths. Otherwise, you know, the bad angel on your shoulder or whatever will creep in and you'll start thinking that you're not very good, and it's just not sustainable. You can't be everything.
Yeah. Talking of playing to your strengths, I think one of the things that you do so well is you do a lot of sort of very intimate portraits that where you seem to get to know the person really well, and they've got a lot of like soul to them. So how do you develop those relationships, choose who to have as a sitter, and like what conversations do you have with them whilst you're like leading up to creating that portrait?
It's really interesting because I think you're talking about here with you, the series that I've done. So when I started my business, I made friends that were, I didn't like the difference between a colleague and a friend. I met people along the way that I met through work but became really fond of because they were, in my world, my freelance work colleagues. So I might not have even known them personally. But when you get to know somebody, as an artist, sometimes you just want to draw them. And it's quite a weird thing to say, I've been staring at your face. I want to draw it. In fact, there's one man that I met at a Pint of Science event. So I was doing like a completely different painting. And I just walked up to him and was like, can I draw you? I mean, it's just so creepy. Anyway, he was creeped out and I've never seen him ever again, but I still think about his face. I'm absolutely desperate to draw him. But, you know, when you have people that come and sit for you, in my mind, I know that it might not be the right portrait the first time that I'm taking that photo. I might have to invite them back. And it's no problem with me making friends. Like, oh no, I'm going to hang out with you again. How awful. So for me, I'm so blessed in my job because I get to meet people from all walks of life. And on the whole, I think people are lovely, you know. Don't think I really meet that many dickheads. So creating that kind of relationship with them, and it also informs how I draw them. So all of the people that are in here with you, it's a 6 portrait series on huge, like, huge heat mounted canvases, all have a really long story, like it's 8 years in the making. And some of them I know really well now, some of them I've lost touch with, some of them I've got back in touch with them, some of them I've been in touch for the whole time, like we've shared a lot. So they were the right 6 to pick. I originally took 10 photos, so 4 I haven't made the cut.
How do you take photographs first, or and then do you, you know, obviously have a conversation? Like, have you ever painted from a person?
From life.
From life, yeah.
I have tried, I just can't ask someone to sit there for that long. Like, it just felt, I've sketched someone and gone, oh, I'll try and paint you now, but then I'm really painting from photograph. It's just too much of an imposition. Those drawings took me on average 2 months. Yeah. Imagine asking someone to come back every day, stand on that spot or sit on that spot, eyes closed. I can't ask that of them. People have got lives. Yeah. So
I'm just thinking about you know, back in the Victorian era when it was just painting and people must have just had to sit there.
Because they could.
Like a bowl of fruit, just like.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
And I wonder if they got to know people, you know, obviously you've met people in different situations, but if the painter and the artist would have that relationship that you know,
oh God,
you get
yeah.
in a different way now.
I mean, in art history, I mean, it's a bit of a sad story, but Gustav Klimt had quite serious relationships with every single person he painted. So it's a long, you know, it's decades, isn't it, of this sitter. It's a symbiotic relationship of like muse and artist, muse and artist. And I, you know, also have music as a muse, ironically. So I've got like, you know, a few things playing off against each other.
Mm. Do you know when something is finished? How do you know when something is finished? Are you just yeah. having a feeling of done, or are you always mm. wanting to add?
It's weird. Like 8 times out of 10, I go, that's done, don't touch it, you know. But occasionally I get the, ooh, I wonder if it would look better if I just. And one of the portraits, Fong, she'll come up, but she took me an extra 2 weeks because I messed with her neck and I shouldn't have. You can't tell, but her neck was fine, and I messed it up. Yeah. So,
do you ever have someone come back to you and say, can you change this? That's not my face.
I've only had one person do that, yeah. and it was awkwardly on a Beer Mat Doodles gig, and I was in a micro pub on Mansfield Road. And when I say micro pub, it was not bigger than a living room, and a man wasn't happy with the size of his chin, and he sat about where you're sitting and just did this for the entire time, going, can you change my chin? Can you change my chin? Whilst I was drawing other people, and it was horrible, and I was really glad when my shift finished, but that's the only person. And obviously the burn it thing, that was also happened to be a portrait, but that's rappers for you.
Fair enough. So, yeah, so speaking of rappers and hip hop, like you're massively into hip hop and it inspires a lot of what you do. Mm-hmm. How did you get into loving that genre, and what about it inspires you?
I loved hip hop from when I was a kid. I think on my final day of class 6, I brought in a 100% rap tape. So, and I loved it. And also, in my neighborhood, the kids didn't hang around per school, we hung around per street. So we, you know, like it wasn't like a little cliquey, all the alternative music people were hanging around with only alternative, like it was a massive mix. So you couldn't genre-fy, you know, that's just the way that we hung out, played Kirby and listened to everything for everyone. So that's kind of that little bit, so I always loved it. But then when I started my illustration business, I didn't know what to paint and draw. And somebody said, well, you just literally paint and draw what you love, because otherwise you're going to be picking things that you're not, it's not really going to translate. So I started drawing, you know, people and things that I loved, and that was hip hop and grime and neo soul and, you know, musicians basically. And I thought that it would just be like, oh yeah, cool, there's a picture of Prince or like a picture of Biggie, whatever. But actually what happened is everybody from the hip-hop community, including actual people from the hip-hop community, were like, this is dope, we love you, this is great, will you do an album cover, do you want to work together, do you want me to make a track for you to put on your YouTube channel, do you want it? They were just so welcoming. So I was like, oh, that's great. And then, because hip-hop is a culture, really not just a music genre, I was like the illustrator that sometimes paints rappers, and I went down to the paint shop, and Montana were like, well, pillar of you know, hip-hop is graffiti, do you want to pick up a can? And I was like, what are you talking about? This is so, can you imagine, in any other culture, going in and just people just being like, here, take that, you're amazing. Like, it was so welcoming. So I was really grateful that I was welcomed and not criticised, shunned, you know.
Mm-hmm. I imagine, like, picking up a paint can, it's a very different way to work than...
It's terrifying. Yeah. Oh, it's terrifying, and I'm not even that good, but I love it.
Whatever.
No, seriously, it's like it is practice, you know.
Yeah. So, you've done a lot of album covers and that kind of thing. Is there any particular ones you want to talk about? And how do you take an album and represent it in a cover? Like, do you have a good chat about it? Do you just go from the lyrics?
It's a great question.
Do they give you a brief?
So, hip hop geeks here, if you are hip hop geeks, we'll know that I've done a lot of collaborations with your old Droog. When me and Droog work together, his raps are constant layers of Easter eggs, and it's all allegorical, basically. So me, as a very allegorical focused artist, putting hidden meanings in things, we immediately started to vibe. So he never sends me any tracks. He will just say, I'm thinking this on this vibe. And I go, and I go away, and he'll go, oh, and then he'll come back to me. So the process between Droog and I is quite unique. Whereas other album covers, I'll get to hear unfinished but full albums in the correct order. And I'll go through it and listen for obvious themes. And also I'll have a conversation with the artist, because it's really hard being a musician at the moment, but certainly in the past 14 years, like, it's been really hard. And often albums particularly suffer. So musicians have some sort of theme, passion, issue, problem, and I want to speak to them about that, because that will really influence the way that I do a cover.
I think, I definitely noticed that. This is sad, but it's probably one of the last CDs I ever bought was, do you know POS?
Yeah.
And he did this amazing album where you could take the gatefold out.
There you go.
Cut it all up, and then you had these little transparent layovers. And I remember it was just as sort of Spotify was becoming big, people were listening to playlists more and buying albums less.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, wow, this is like a new way to look at an album as a piece of art that's like, you know, they made a really cool video for it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just this idea that you could integrate the two really, really nicely. And I guess you need to keep championing making music and art fused like that, which is good.
Music and art are the best team. So when you get one complementing the other, it's a joy. As soon as you get like one being dampened down or the other, then it kills the other one. Like, we're brilliant when we work together. So if you meet somebody that has a similar idea or can elevate your product, vice versa, symbiotic, then it works really well.
Yeah, and it's crossing those communities over, isn't it, as well? Because, I mean, there might be people in the hip-hop community that don't think about art or the artwork. Yeah. You know, they're very music-focused another section of hip-hop. But do you ever do, like, have you ever done any live events with hip-hop artists? Or is that something you'd ever do? Because I can imagine.
I think I've done lots of, like, live drawing at hip-hop events. And I've like exhibited at hip hop events, but it's quite, I think you'd need to do like, I think it would be like an art installation, wouldn't it? If you actually drew and maybe scratched at the same time or whatever, you'd have, that's an Arts Council fund, isn't it? That's an application in the making.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about the exhibition that you have coming up.
Yeah.
So it's, if I believe rightly, it's just over the road, is that correct?
Yeah, so it's actually, it's, you see where all the hoarding is, where they're building student flats for the Broadmarsh thing? If you go down there, there's a big, like, semi-circular old industrial building called Richmond House, and, like, Television Workshop, I think, used to be in there. And the exhibition is on the ground floor. We've, like, turned it into an event space. There's a girl called Jo, who is leasing the entire four-story building and turning it into a dance studio, and she's going to make it into a creative hub for performing arts. But I contacted the owner and said, have you got any like really messy, dirty, like non-occupied places that I can have a disgusting exhibition in? And he said, yes. And then I turned up and this dance girl was like, I've painted the floor, I've built a bar. And I was like, oh, right, it's beautiful now. So now it looks like a really shiny exhibition space. But yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's my first ever solo and I'm doing it all myself.
That's amazing. So it's called I Can Heal You and Give You Art.
I Can Heal and Give You
I
Art.
I Can Heal and Give You Art. Can you talk a little bit about the title?
I can. It's from Kendrick Lamar's rap rebuttal, 616 in LA, toward Drake, because they had a big argument. And basically, The whole thing, because it happened on a bank holiday, so I was waking up every day of this bank holiday and Hip Hop Santa had delivered me another hardcore blow towards Drake from Kendrick. If anyone is Team Drake, you are not welcome at my exhibition whatsoever. And I actually have a drink on the menu called the BBL Drizzy, which is a cup of nothing. So anyway, but in the grand scheme of things, the whole rap beef represented far more to me than just two people arguing, because it was about protecting a culture. And at the moment, there are serious similarities in the art world and in the creative world that really made me excited, because now that we are starting to call out some of the people, or some of the, I would even say, structural machines, it makes our voices louder. So I couldn't believe my luck, knowing that I was going to have a solo exhibition with linking my own personal portrait series that features people, all of my, well, not all, but a curated hip-hop album cover section, and then loads of Bleach and Ink paintings of musicians that I've been listening to in 2023 and love. And then having Kendrick Lamar saying we need to protect everything that is sacred about our lovely little family. It's like, this is great. So I thought, yeah, I'll put that in as well. Like, I'll do a little nod to it.
Brilliant. I like the fact that you've taken something that's so global and like brought it to Nottingham and made it really personal as well.
Thank you.
So you're going to have the Here With You series in there.
So that's all the big massive charcoal drawings that you will have seen flash up.
Yeah, and then album covers, and was there a third element as well?
Yeah, the Bleach and Ink. So I did like, basically, when I was doing the charcoal drawings, it was quite serious, and it was quite physical, and it was very detailed. And so I was finding that I was putting my tools down and wanting to go crazy with a bit of colour. And I was listening to new artists, or I wasn't, they're not new, but I was discovering artists for the first time. In 2023. So I used Bleach and Ink and just went wild and then turned them into portraits and ended up being a really popular series. People were like, this is really good. And I was like, well, I hope it's not better than this that I've been working on for a year. But yeah, fair enough. So yeah, I'm showing them as well.
Yeah. And Bleach and Ink, do they repel each other?
Yeah.
Is that the process? And is that something that you'd just played around with and learnt as on the job, or is that something that's a traditional technique?
Laura Decorum, who is also a fellow Beer Mat Doodler and an artist, said, girl, I think you'd really like Bleach and Ink. Have you ever played with it? And I went, no. And I tried it, and I was like, whoa. Because she wanted me to do colourful things again, because that's what she likes, it, you know, when I do that. And I was like, oh, it's a bit played out, though. I've been doing that for years. And so, but when she said, yeah, but try that technique, loved it. Loved it. So it's all thanks to her, really.
Brilliant. I guess it's quite nice having a material that, like, does its own thing that you can't always fully control.
Can't control it at all. Yeah. You've just got to live with it.
Cool.
There's one piece that I hate, actually, and everyone loves it. And I'm like, oh, not a happy accident for Emily.
I guess that's when, you know, with like writers, they say once you've published a book, it's not yours anymore.
Exactly.
It's the public's.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I guess with a piece of art as well.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah. So that is the 20... remind me of the dates that's on.
The launch party is the 24th of August, and that will run 6 till 11. We've got DJ Fever, food from the Hip Hop Food Shop, obviously my bar... and we're selling two T-shirt ranges from Blue Cheese. One that I released with Blue Cheese clothing before, but a new one that no one has ever seen before, and loads of merch that I've done. And then the full exhibition runs 25th to 31st of August, and I'm going to open up the gallery 11 till 7 to give people time to come and visit it after work. And I'm doing a couple of workshops as well in the week as well. I just can't remember them dates off the top of my head.
Cool. But you can, I guess if people want to find out more, they can go to your website and find
socials. You can go to my website and my socials, but I'm releasing the main tickets after I've done this because I wanted to promote this. So on Monday, you'll be able to get a live ticket link and then you can go and book whatever you want. So yeah.
That's brilliant. Well, I look forward to coming down. Definitely will do.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap things up shortly, but I've got a couple of sort of slightly quick fire questions. If you could sit down with any artist, musician, visual artist, whatever, alive or dead, and have dinner, who would you choose? What would you eat, and what would you ask them?
Oh my God, that's an amazing question. Right, visual artist, Yves Klein. Right. I'd probably try and eat snails with him, just because I think he'd look hilarious eating the snails.
Can you tell us who Yves Klein is?
Oh, he's the guy that did the Blue series in the 60s. He was like throwing women at the Blue, but that's not the reason why I like him. I like him because he had a photography series where he made it look as if he was dying, but the way that he did that was to chuck himself out of windows at various points in Paris with a mattress beneath him. And he looks delighted when he's doing it. And I've got that one photograph particularly all over my house because it's just brilliant. It's pure freedom. Anyway, and what would I ask him? Did it ever hurt? Probably. Like when he landed on the mattress.
It's for art though, doesn't it, darling? You have to throw yourself out of windows for art.
You've got to. You've got to, yeah.
Okay, so if you could go back 10 years to the start of your career, per se, and give yourself one little bit of advice, one little nugget of advice, what would it be?
Don't just do commission work, because you do naturally need to make enough money to do the work that you want to make, not just, you know, burst in 10 years' time and do a solo exhibition at your own expense after having to take a year off to get it out of your system. It would have been, you know, I could have just done a little bit over 10 years, but no, I had to take an entire year off.
For two decades and nearing 200 printed issues, Left Lion magazine has shone a light on Nottingham's culture and entertainment scene. We believe we are part of what makes the city unique. Not many others in the country or world have a free independent press like us. Left Lion is Nottingham's meeting point for information about what's going on in our city, from the big companies and issues to the grassroots, promoters and community organisations. Our printed magazine is free to access for all, and we believe it's important it stays like that. However, we are increasingly relying upon donations from our readers to continue what we do. If you'd like to support our work, then you can do so by making a monthly pledge at patreon.com/leftlion. By pledging just £2 per month, you'll help make a real difference and will receive the digital copy of our magazine before it's available in town or on our website. If you pledge £5 per month, we'll also print your name or the name of a loved one, your band, your small business or your pet in each issue. If you can support us with a pledge of £10 per month, we'll also send you each issue through the post, and you'll receive an art print of the cover with each copy, plus occasional other free gifts too. For more details about supporting Left Lion, please visit patreon.com/leftlion.
Well, I really enjoyed that chat, and a huge thank you to Emily for joining us. If you'd like to go and catch Emily's debut solo exhibition, I Can Heal and Give You Art, she'll be taking over Richmond House, which is on Canal Street, from Sunday the 25th of August, and there's a private view on Saturday the 24th. I highly recommend going to check out some of Emily's art. So for more information, search for Emily Catherine Illustration to find her socials and website. Our next podcast will be recorded live on Friday the 6th of September at Central Library, and our guest this time will be the soulful singer-songwriter Dowdy Matsiko. We'll be hearing about Dowdy's music and inspirations, plus he'll be treating us to a few songs. So come along to that, and we've also got a few more special guests lined up over the next few months, so keep your eyes out for more info. You can get free tickets for each of these events thanks to the generous funding of the Arts Council. Find out more and book yourself a place at leftlion.co.uk/library. Thank you for listening right to the end, and see you next time. Bye.